Welcome to Afronomics, a podcast where we discuss big ideas for transforming African economies in the 21st century. I'm your host, Andrew Dabalane, the World Bank Chief Economist for the Africa region. For those long-time listeners, you know my predecessor, Albert Zuvak, who started this podcast. I hope we can live up to the standards he set. In every episode, we bring a big idea to the table and delve into a discussion on the implications for development practitioners, policymakers, and their influencers, namely African citizens. Today's big idea is from a newly published report titled Pathways to Prosperity for Adolescent Girls in Africa, which is a collaboration between the Centers for Global Development, the Population Council, and the World Bank. And the big idea we're going to discuss today is that investing in adolescent girls' empowerment can generate more than a tenfold return economic impact. In other words, a dollar invested in adolescent girls gives you $10 in return. And if you project that to 2040, that's a total of $2.4 trillion. To discuss this big idea, I am joined by two of the editors of the report, Estelle Kosube from the World Bank and Kehinde Ajay from the Center for Global Development. Kehinde and Estelle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's start with the big idea. You say in the report that a quarter of adolescent girls who in the world number about 1.2 billion are already in Africa. And investing a dollar in one of these girls gives you a return of $10. So I don't know any investment that has those kinds of returns. That's 900%, right?
One of the reasons that we wrote this report is to highlight this huge investment and this strong potential way to transform Africa's future. And one of the big reasons why people don't invest in adolescent girls is because they fall between two groups that people tend to focus on. One is children and one is adult women. So there's a lot of investment in terms of trying to close gender gaps between men and women. We see that women earn less than men do. Women have lower levels of labor force participation. So when people get into adulthood, there's a recognition that there are these big gaps between men and women. And increasing strategies to try and support women's financial inclusion, recognizing the big gap that there is at stake from not involving half of the world's population. But then on the other hand, we also see a lot of investment in children, recognizing that investments in at that young age can have huge returns. Adolescent girls tend to fall between this gap. So they aren't really the focus of investments, for example, to support early learning. They aren't traditionally focused on by health systems that focus on things like vaccination and nutrition for children.
Go ahead, Estelle, you want to add to this?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's really, like as Kehinde mentioned, like the core idea of the report. And also, like, what we really want to emphasize is also, like, the fact that adolescent girls are overlooked as the key drivers of economic growth. They are often seen as, like, in a social welfare lens, while they are actually key drivers of growth, and we do have to recognize that. And also, like, these investment and return that you are talking about, so they won't accrue just now. They will accrue in the time. As you mentioned, we're talking about 2040.
So you've written this book to let people know that there are these returns on the sidewalks that people are not, you know, exploiting. So let's say I'm a policymaker, I read your report. For people who are out there listening, what are the investments you're proposing? What kind of investments are we talking about? You're proposing that, you know, the policymakers really prioritize for these adolescent girls?
Yeah, no, that's a key question, actually. In the report, we really highlight, like, a broad range of investment, actually, that can be, like, adopted by policymakers and implementers. So we go from actually addressing the foundational needs of adolescent girls, like, namely, like, health, education, to enabling resources like financial literacy and, you know, like, also, like, economic opportunities for girls. So we have, like, different profile in the report where we have, like, girls that are, like, at different stages of their life and also are impacted by different context like rural or urban or are out of school. And what we really want to emphasize is that, like, different investment will play differently for these girls. So Aya, an 18-year-old, actually, that we emphasize in the report. So she's living in a rural area. She's out of school. She's also a parent. So for her, what you want to do is actually like bring childcare services and also like promote economic opportunities that are right actually for her skills and for what she's looking for actually. I mean, adapted to her reality, basically, the fact that she is a parent.
Go ahead.
Adding on that, you know, historically, there have been three things that people have focused on for in terms of programming and investment for adolescent girls, which is keep girls in school, delay marriage, and delay childbearing. And one of the things we highlight in the report is at the time of writing, half of adolescent girls were already out of school or had married or had a child. This is half of 15 to 19-year-old girls in Africa. And as Estelle is saying, we don't have just one profile of adolescent girls' experiences. And this varies by countries. This varies in rural and urban areas. And so there are questions of, you know, the issues of thinking about the particular circumstances or complexities for girls who are married and have children are foremost. Thinking about girls' access to foundational human capital, so keeping girls in school, access to the adequate health services. So these are things that vary across different countries and based on different profiles.
Okay, so a couple of things that you just mentioned, which is, one is that, of course, adolescent girls are not all the same, right? There are 15-year-olds, there are 10-year-olds, there are 19-year-olds, and so on, right? And they live in different places. The report talks about what needs to be done, right, for different types of adolescents, right, or different ages of adolescents. What has worked? Let's start with just what has worked. Are there programs that has worked for them? And then, you know, are there some that have not worked, have been tried and have not worked?
Yeah, no, thank you, Andrew. I think, yeah, there's quite a lot of things actually that we know actually have worked or not worked. But there is still also, like, I want to emphasize that before, like, answering your question, there is still a lot actually to understand and to know. So in the report, actually, we do have like two chapters that are actually focusing on those. So we try to see what work actually to improve like what we call human fundamentals, human capital fundamental, which has like a health and education outcome, and the other outcomes actually that we consider in our framework for defining empowerment. So agency outcome, but also like everything related to enabling resources.
Well, explain that. What is agency?
So agency, that's a great question, is the ability actually for girls to actually like set their goals, make their decision, and be able to act on it. But for girls, it's kind of tricky because at the same time, there is like this like dependency, I would say, actually, to their parents at some point, and also like after they transition to other household. But we try actually to link like agency to other framework of empowerment for women, but also like defining agency that is really like specific to girls, looking at other outcome also, not in a vacuum, kind of related to the other component that we define in the report. So human capital fundamentals, as I mentioned, enabling resources, but also labor market outcome.
But let's talk about what do you mean enabling resources? Like, you know, For a listener out there, they hear the word enabling resources and they'll be like, what does that mean? Or even a parent who's listening to this podcast, right?
Yeah, so the goal, and with the title of the report, we're talking about pathways to prosperity. And as Estelle mentioned, people really don't think about adolescent girls as economic agents a lot of the time. We think about protecting them from harms or, you know, keeping them in towards a path of finishing school and, you know, not getting married, not having children. One of the things we want to highlight is that adolescent girls are provide a mechanism for economic prosperity, both for themselves, for their households, their communities, and the countries as a whole, and the region as a whole. And so when we talk about enabling resources, it's basically highlighting what are the types of investments or complementary factors that are necessary to ensure that adolescent girls can fulfill the potential to achieve prosperity in their lives. And these are things, for example, like access to financial inclusion, to financial resources. Access agency is a big one, being able to set decisions for their own economic future and to use resources around them to invest towards that, to move towards that. We also talk about the context, the role of context as a foundation towards economic prosperity for adolescent girls. So are they in places where social norms prevent them from doing certain types of work or prevent their movement from them, you know, moving around outside by themselves? Are they in places where laws allow them to have access to jobs in the same way, where laws allow them to have access to ability to inherit things from their families in the same way? Are there social norms? I think I mentioned social norms. But what are the things that in their environment around them that can facilitate their participation in the economy, in the broader society, and their ability to fill that, to fulfill their potential? So those are what we talk about, the enabling resources. And
so has education worked for adolescent girls?
Yes, and there have been huge gains in that. And I would say that's a place where we've learned. And you say worked, I would say it this way. There's been a lot of progress in terms of supporting girls to get into school. There are challenges in certain places, for example, settings affected by fragility, conflict, and violence. But that's one of the areas where we know the most about what is effective. And things like giving transfers to support education. And this can be, a lot of the time, it's in-kind transfers. So it's not direct transfers to households, but things like scholarships that enable girls to go to school when the households couldn't afford for it directly.
The way I read the report was that it's really, really important to invest very early in these young girls, right? In their education and their health and their security and so on. But obviously, we know that that doesn't always succeed, right? So at some point, you know, these girls in their, you know, they're 15, they're 16, they may not have had the best start to their schooling or something. So for those girls, for the older girls, what does the report propose that the policymakers do?
So we talk about comprehensive policies or interventions to support economic participation, economic inclusion. And this is, when you talked about, when you asked, and this is also relevant for, you know, girls who are in school too, you asked about, has education worked? And it works in terms of, we've seen increases in how much education girls are receiving across the region. But we still see these gaps in terms of, once they start entering the labor market, what types of jobs are girls doing, or young women doing? How much are they earning relative to men? What's their, the likelihood that they transition into finding work that, or economic opportunities. And this is where things like giving adolescent girls skills and connecting them to economic opportunities at the same time is effective. And I think we, getting back to this larger point, is that this is often something that is not highlighted because of the fears of encouraging child labor. The reality is, a lot of, one of the things we highlight in the report, a lot of girls, even the girls who are in school, are working. So a lot of girls are doing some kind of work. So it's really a question of, what type of work are girls doing, and how can we support girls to make a transition to finding age-appropriate work, dignified work.
I think in the report, what we also emphasize is also like multi-sectoral approaches. So we look at different type of intervention that are combined, actually can make a difference in different outcome for adolescent girls. For instance, like when we look at intervention, like in the report, like bundle of intervention that have like grant vocational training, socio-emotional skills training, and also like placement in the work sector. So these intervention have been shown, actually. So that's one of the, I would say, like, few intervention that has been shown to work on domains such as labor market outcome, and also like the enabling resources that Kinde were mentioning.
When you look at the landscape of the countries, right, and where these adolescent girls are clustered, and which of these countries have done well in meeting the needs of the adolescent girls, and which ones Well, let's talk about the ones that have been successful. I don't want to put you into trouble. So maybe you don't need to name a country, but let's talk about categories of countries that have succeeded in education but have not succeeded in something else. The ones have succeeded in maybe providing work and not have succeeded in other. What are these categories?
So that's a great way actually like to address this question. So in the report we have five categories of country, what we call actually the marriage like delayers, the educators, the laborers.
The generalists. And the survivors. Yeah, that first group, the marriage and childbearing delayers, where we have countries like Rwanda, countries like Burundi, Ghana, and Togo, are countries where they have the lowest levels of marriage and childbearing among 15 to 19-year-olds. They have relatively high levels of education, so they've done well in terms of ensuring that girls stay in school and providing the resources to ensure that they and having the environment to ensure that they delay marriage and childbearing. Where they have scope for improvement is in thinking about girls once they leave school, how likely are they to transition into working? And some of the countries in those groups have done better than others. But where they've done really well is in the delaying marriage and childbearing. We have a group of educators, which tend to be countries that have higher levels of income and more formal economies. So South Africa is in there as one example. And it's a place where you have relatively high, among the highest levels of girls who are still enrolled in school, but very low levels of economic participation of girls engaging in paid work. And so there the challenge is how to transition from education to working. And this tends to be, like I said, a challenge in countries that have relatively high levels of income, more formalized economies where, the main type of work is salaried work, and that is really hard for young people to transition into getting those types of jobs. So thinking about creating opportunities for young people and building on the progress they've made in increasing educational attainment. We have the generalists who are kind of in the middle of doing everything. Well, so they have moderate levels of marriage and childbearing, moderate levels of education, moderate levels of economic participation. And there, on the one hand, you see that they have managed to do pretty well in terms of supporting adolescent girls' well-being, but there are still gaps in terms of the extent they can go in terms of increasing educational attainment even further. And examples of countries in this group, Nigeria, for example, is a country in this. And I should say, this is just talking about, Nigeria is also a country that has regions, sub-regions that reflect these different categories. So this is just talking about the national level. And then we have the laborers. So these are places like Tanzania, where we have high levels of girls who are working, so economically engaged. Relatively lower levels of economic educational attainment compared to the generalist educators and the marriage and childbearing delayers. And so there the question is, how do you, although they seem to be places where levels of work are high, how do you ensure that that work that girls are engaged in is work that where they do have strong prospects of economic opportunity moving forward, where they also have abilities to continue their investment in their education and in their human capital. And then lastly, we have this group called the survivors. These are all countries defined as contexts affected by fragility, conflict, and violence by the World Bank, and also places that are tend to have low income, and they have the lowest levels of education, the lowest levels of employment, and they also have the highest levels of marriage and childbearing. So these are places really in crisis and where there are multiple opportunities to address the well-being of adolescent girls, and where we see the most vulnerabilities experienced by adolescent girls. I think those were Mali, Niger, those, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that's hard, right?
That is hard.
So what does the report say anything about how to solve that problem of fragile countries in conflict and what to do for adolescent girls?
Yeah, we do actually in the report kind of like suggest some intervention actually that this country could take. I mean, all of them actually. And that's a nice segue actually to go through like what we're doing right now. Because like the report, as you know, is really about like Africa. And as Kende mentioned, like some countries even also have like within the country different kind of like, you know, challenges. So in some country, you have like these like categories. You do have like region maybe where there is a lot of vulnerabilities, where there is like a lot of girls actually like going to school but not working, etc. So what we're trying to do right now is actually having like a country approach. So doing like taking the report and having now actually, I would say like country brief, where we can really look at the particular of this country and really look at, you know, like the question of like vulnerability in the countries in the FCV context, for instance, like go look into Niger. So what's going on in there? Like, and trying to see actually what could be like the intervention that the country can take that can help adolescent girls. For usually like for this country, it will be like really like going from the fundamental. So as Kende mentioned, actually, these are countries where you have like a high level of girls that are already married. So it will be like trying to have like services actually that will cater to these girls and their family, like cash transfer, for instance, like addressing like poverty, this kind of need to start with, and then build on top actually to extend to other needs of girls. And that's what we're trying to do now at the country level, because obviously like looking only at the continent level is also like, you know, not looking at this heterogeneity that we want to emphasize.
Having gone through the report, having gone and talked to people, is there something you've missed that you wish you would tell? Or have you completely exhausted all the ideas that are necessary to do this?
No, I feel like, I mean, at least for me, I feel like I will really emphasize the opportunities actually of new kind of like new type of intervention or new mechanism that maybe we haven't explored a lot in the report because there is no evidence, or it's like, you know, like a new evidence, like digital, for instance, like, you know, like things that can in like the context in our countries are difficult. We know there is like different priorities. There is like competing thing, like the resources actually are scarce, right? And I see that there is a new areas actually of way to deliver intervention to adolescent girls and their family that can be promising for actually making an impact, but also like taking into account the resources, the lack of resources in our continent.
The thing I would emphasize is, and we touch on this in the report, is the role of legal environment policy change to make wide sweeping change. And of thinking about this as a cross-cutting issue. I think we often try to say in this domain, what can we do? But really thinking about how can all of our policies, all of our programs, all of the things that we are providing be tweaked with a perspective of serving the needs of adolescent girls and supporting their well-being. And part of that, I think, can be, and we do this in the report, but I think a policymaker should do this more, is talking to adolescent girls. Like, how do you experience this country, this environment as an adolescent girl? And what do you see as things that you encounter, or ways that, you know, if we structured this thing differently, or if this law didn't stop you from doing that, that this would make your livelihood better? So I think the thinking about it holistically by really saying, how is this country, how are our policies, how are our institutions designed, and how can we design them in a way that takes into account the specific peculiar situation of adolescent girls and being in this transition between children and adults.
I think that's a good place to end. Thank you so much, Estela and Kehinde, for being our guests in our reboot of Afronomics with this great, insightful report. I couldn't think of a better way to start. You've certainly raised the bar for the future episodes. And for our listeners, you can find out more about this report and listen to other podcast episodes at worldbank.org/Afronomics. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time.